9. I reckon we're going to get through this. Okay, it might be 9 in 7 3/4. Go on.
There you go.
Okay,
your
here we
segment.
Go. Time has come to really penalise players for these non-football off-the-ball incidents. Jumper punches, swinging arms, gut punches, cop a week, and leave any additional time to be served to the MRO or tribunal. Fines aren't enough. Take a game off them. They're not working. They are nothing but cheap shots. They've been allowed to go untouched, properly untouched for too long. Get rid of them. Have a week off and have a long, hard think about yourself, you goose.
Very nice. Very good. Why in football do we use extra words when they're not necessary and come up with really weird ways of describing things that happen on the football field? Stick with me. I'm talking about some of the language mainly used by our senior coaches and some of our commentators as well. Our great mate, Craig McRae, is very big on this one.
That's a space we don't live in. We don't live in that space. You know, I don't want to live in that space.
Problems at home, renovations. What's going on, Craig? What does that mean?
How dare you have a go at Craig McRae?
Chris Fagan the other week.
We'll just be working hard at trying to get back to being the best version of ourselves.
What are you talking about? You're just trying to get back to your best. Why do we talk like this? And after Collingwood's unselfish performance against Port Adelaide last week, all week I've heard people saying, it's important everyone gets a lick of the ice cream. Pox! Every week we hear a coach or a player say, we need to go back and work on our craft. What if they happen to work on your bloody skills? And the commentators don't get off scot-free either. Fans the ball out wide. Shot on goal. Good user by foot. Oh boy, wowee. Keep it bloody simple.
That is, I mean,
he cares. It means something to him. That's what 99's all about.
We know what they're talking.
I look forward to your original stuff now as opposed to something you plagiarised off Pant.
Honestly.
Come on.
You're walking a very thin
Come
line.
On, we're running out of time.
LIV Golf has provided an exceptional opportunity for Australians to see the elite golfers of the world play on our shores. Yes, there's been a lot of contention about what the merits of LIV Golf and where the money is coming from. But what we have seen today is 35,000 people at the event lining the fairways, getting up close and personal with the superstars of the game. It's also provided stunning views of the Adelaide Hills, provide a picturesque backdrop, and it's been an outstanding addition to golf in this country. One of the big things about LIV Golf, though, has been is what are they giving back? Yes, the billions that have been offered up to players to provide them with exceptional resources. But the good news is it's starting to filter through. According to sources speaking on the condition of
anonymity,
because they weren't authorised to discuss it publicly, LIV, and in particular, Cameron Smith's Ripper GC franchise will make financial commitments to MyGolf, Australia's official junior program designed to introduce children to golf. LIV is doing good things for golf in this country, despite Annie Ma continually and constantly poo-pooing it.
You done?
Yes.
Essendon play finals this year. Don't bugger it up. Finals bound through to around 18 last year. They burped up all over themselves and fell over. And I'm going to make a statement here. I'm going out on a limb. It ain't going to happen this year. They've got some artillery to come back into this side at various levels of importance and possibility. Names like Guelphy, Perkins, Ridley, Setterfield, and the possibilities provided by players like Sardis, Reed, and maybe even Caddy. Who knows? Who knows by the end of 2024 what some of those slightly unknowns might produce for this Essendon football team. But you've got some depth. You've got the best captain in Australian football right now. You've got some key personnel at either end of the ground with Peter Wright and Ben McKay. Do not burp up all over yourself this year.
We'll just work on our craft. Essendon v Collingwood and Carlton Geelong were certainly the two most enticing matches on paper heading into this round, but Fremantle v Bulldogs in Perth is big for both clubs. The Dockers have lost 3 in a row. They stunk it up in the Derby last week. And in their last 4 matches, they've kicked 9 goals, 9 goals, 9 goals, 10 goals. With a defence led by 2 guns, skipper Alex Pearce and interceptor Luke Ryan, surely there's no reason they can't take the handbrake off and take more risks. If there isn't a response to the Derby debacle, the heat will be turned up on Justin Longmuir. That's the situation Luke Beveridge found himself in last week, and his team responded in style against the Saints. But the bounce back factor often produces that type of performance. This match is a bigger test. The Dogs are a better team than Fremantle, and while no game in the West is easy, they should come back with the 4 points. But how would you know? It's been hard to trust the Dogs in recent years, and it's hard to have faith in those dull Dockers.
Oh, well done. Score reviews so far this year have come under scrutiny. I think we all agree that we want to get the score right, but players, fans, commentators, they are sick and tired of the lack and the snapping of momentum that happens in order to go to reviews. Well, on SEN's Dwayne Russell program today. He believes that goal umpires are going to be instructed differently when it comes to contentious calls, suggesting that they're going to go back to the way it was some time ago when they signal a goal, if they believe so, before the review center ARC inspects the call. This is how it always should have been. This is the way it should be. Congratulations to Fan Power, those calling into Dwayne's show and ours, venting their frustration. This is also an example of common sense prevailing and the AFL listening and making the appropriate adjustment.
Is my case in point proven? Thank you. There's a lot not right about the Lions through the first 7 weeks of the season, but Eric Hipwood's output must be uppermost among some of their concerns. At the end of 2022, Hipwood and the Lions agreed to a massive contract extension, securing him through until the end of 2029. Last year he was good, building toward being even better, developing into the player the Lions invested so much in. 7 weeks into this season and he's stalled. He's a bit player, with Danaher spending more time up the ground and on the ball. Surely they're expecting Hipwood to be their target man in attack. He hasn't been that so far. With their season sliding away, the next 4 weeks leading into the bye is absolutely massive for Brisbane. Gold Coast, Adelaide, Richmond, Hawthorn, win them all, and you're back in the mix. Let's see what Eric can bring to the table in his side's moment of need.
The Brisbane Lions won't be winning the flag this year, and on the evidence of the first 7 rounds, it appears they've gone to the well one too many times. The last 5 years, grand final, prelim, semi, prelim, semi. That's a lot of extra footy, and does being a non-Victorian team also play its part? The Lions don't appear hungry in 2024, and the fight just isn't there. The Lions have been outscored 48 goals to 27 after halftime. You combine this with key players being out of form, even a finals appearance is in doubt. They've got more firepower than most on paper. Danaher's their leading goal kicker with just 12. Cameron's only got 10, Hipwood 9, McCarthy 8, and Bailey 5. Last year, those five combined for 218 goals. But if they fail this year, and I think they will, it doesn't mean it's the end of the era. The majority of their key players are still in their prime. Plus, they've got Will Ashcroft to come back, his brother Levi coming in the draft this year, and Kitty Coleman will also be back in 2025. They won't win it this year, but they can bounce back next year.
Interesting.
Brad Scott raised the issue, and I'd like to support him on we need to have a review into the sub rule. The way in which it was implemented to start with to prevent teams from being disadvantaged by in-game injuries had merit. However, if you can restrict the number of interchanges that teams can have, whether the number is 4 or 5, it's time to eliminate any pause in play to figure out whether someone is actually injured or not, or they are required to make the sub. It was highlighted in the game with Harry Jones yesterday. Should we make the sub? Shouldn't we make the sub? These are decisions that should not have to be forced upon medical staff and coaching staff if you just allow the teams to have a
Well done, Keith. It's 6 minutes to
cut off. Dwayne, Brad Scott, and Greg Norman provided your three topics today.
Why?